Hi, I'm Shannon, the podcast producer here at C-SPAN. And this week on the Lectures in History podcast, a discussion on how Americans interpreted the Constitution in the first decades of the United States. Prairie View A&M history professor Ronald Goodwin discusses the early republic. Hang tight, class starts right after this.
Hi, I'm Tammy, and joining me today is Paul, as we celebrate 45 years of C-SPAN's unblinking eye on the democratic process.
That's right, Tammy. Since our founding in 1979, C-SPAN has been documenting history with a unique approach, unfiltered, without commentary, and entirely independent from government funding. C-SPAN is funded by fees from our cable and satellite distribution partners, and now with fewer people subscribing to cable and satellite, we're asking you to help support our next 45 years.
It's amazing to see how C-SPAN has adapted and grown. With the rise of digital platforms and social media, C-SPAN has expanded its reach. So no matter where you are, you have 24/7, 365 access to the democratic process.
And as we navigate this ever-changing media environment, C-SPAN's dedication to putting you in the rooms where politics is debated and policy is determined will not waver.
We ask you to support C-SPAN's vital mission. As we celebrate 45 years of service, your contribution helps us to continue to adapt and grow in this digital age. Visit cspan.org/donate to make your contribution today.
Here's to 45 more years of bringing democracy directly to you wherever you get your news. Thank you for your support. Visit cspan.org/donate today to make a difference.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
All right. Today, we're going to pick up from the post-American Revolution era. So we're going into the 1780s. And I'm calling this the development of the republic. So we're coming out of this war, this conflict, and I needed you to make sure that you understand why the revolution happened. And not just why, but now we're dealing with the aftermath of that conflict. So within chapters 7 and 8, these are some of the themes that we need to deal with. The ideology that all men are created equal. Now, we know that there's some issues with that coming out of the Declaration of Independence, 1776, going forward. We do know that there were folks that were excluded from full citizenship, even before we really, really even get started. Let me back up one. This idea of mob rule, we talked about who financed the revolution. The native aristocracy, that it was their commitment, even in the Declaration of Independence, that they were pledging their lives and their fortunes to this. Now they've got to live up to that promise that they made to the lower classes, those that actually fought and died for this revolution. Because the carrot that was dangled in front of them is that they would have rights that they might not otherwise enjoy if they stayed within the empire. We've talked about the different types of government, whether it's the unitary, federalism, and confederacy. So the Articles of Confederation followed this. The monarchy was obviously a strong centralized government. But under the Articles of Confederation, they went completely the opposite direction. They did not want a strong central government for fear that it would take them right back to the government that they just left. But the problems with the Confederacy is that it was very difficult to get to the one, the United States. And what does that look like? They're still trying to figure that out. This is still an ongoing process because they've never done this before. They've never seen what this looked like before. So they're trying some different things out. Now, under the Articles of Confederation, it wasn't ratified until 1781, but I want you to see this last bullet. No executive branch, a weak Congress that could not regulate commerce or taxes. Now, if I can't regulate taxes, that impacts me because now some of those services that would be provided for the common good of everybody is not there. Now, this is the federal government. The state governments were able to do these things. So I've got each of the 13 states almost functioning as 13 separate entities, 13 separate countries, 13 separate republics. Because coming out of the revolution, individuals like John Adams were adamant, every state's got to have their own, because they were fearful of this strong centralized government. It might start off okay, but somewhere along the line, it could go askew. And they said, that's what happened to King George. So I've got these 13 entities, but I don't have the one United States. And that's important. When we talk about what is a republic, what is from your readings, how do you deal with a republic? What does that look like? And in another slide coming up, I'm going to juxtapose a republic versus a democracy. Because we almost use those words interchangeably. And in many cases, they can be, but there are slight differences. So within a republic, we're dealing with the idea of citizen participation. Here's where the nuance comes in. When we talk about a republic, it leans towards a representative democracy. So they already knew, coming out of the revolution, that this was going to be a government that had citizen participation. So what does a direct democracy look like? It says where every citizen votes directly in its own governance. So every time there's a policy that needs to be voted upon, everybody's voting for it. Why is that cumbersome in a country that is as spread out as they are? And they're not even that spread out. But why is that cumbersome for them? He's coming to you. Can you say that again, please?
There's no capital city for everybody to vote, and not to mention there's no, like, everybody's so far apart.
Okay. So it's very difficult for every citizen to be in Congress every time there's a vote. How do we deal with that today? And one of the things that, as we move forward within this republic, is you have the right as a citizen to know what your elected officials are voting on, okay? Whenever Congress is in session, you have the right to sit in the hall and watch who's doing what. Now, if you can't be there, now we have C-SPAN, we have television, we have internet. But in this day, they didn't have that. So they already knew that they were going towards a representative form of government, which meant one person would represent a certain number. They knew that. So one of the issues as we start moving towards developing the one is how do we determine that representation? Now, Shays' Rebellion, Daniel Shays, farmer, Massachusetts. They are upset about taxes. Now, why would that be problematic for this federal government that did not have that much power to begin with? They understood, this is the mid-1780s, that 15 years, 20 years earlier, they were the ones complaining about taxes. And they saw what happened. They were able to lead a rebellion against the government. So now those that led the rebellion are now in seat of power. So they're looking at Daniel Shays and his friends and wondering, what can we do to protect that which we just created? So it was determined to send in some troops, but Shays and his friends didn't really combat them. They went home. But now we've got the leaders coming out of that Second Continental Congress that have determined the Articles of Confederation do not give us the power we think we need, because they are worried about this idea of mob rule. It's one thing to have a king on the other side of the Atlantic, but it's another thing to try to pacify all these folks who are citizens. And keep in mind, who are citizens at this point? It's not women. It's not slaves. It's not free blacks. It's, or anybody else, non-white. And it's not non-property owners. So there's a small defined scope of citizens that they're dealing with. Now, does that necessarily constitute the native aristocracy? Not necessarily, but it's a small defined group that they're worried about. All right. So Shays' rebellion exposed the fact that the Articles of Confederation really is not sufficient. So when they meet in May of 1787, the goal was to amend, was to fix the Articles of Confederation. That was their goal when they sat down. They got there, they determined we would do better if we just start over. Now, in this starting over, there's a couple things they already knew. One, that they wanted a representative type government. They knew that. Another thing that they knew, that they wanted this idea of checks and balances. They did not want to give all power into one individual, into one office. They wanted to spread that thing out. All right? So they already knew that. And the Articles did not give them the power, the ability to put that in motion. So they started over. Now, here's the problem. One of. They were sent by their states to fix the Articles of Confederation, not create something new. So at the end of this, they're going to have to go back and try to defend why they didn't listen to their state. Preamble to the Constitution, you guys know this, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. The thing that I want you to see about this is it starts off, we the people of the United States, not we the people of New York, we the people of Virginia or South Carolina. They're trying to get to the one entity. And they're struggling with that. Because does that mean that if I'm in Virginia, I have to lose myself in this new United States? Can I maintain my culture, my character, and still be part of the United States? Can you be a Texan from Texas and still part of the U.S.? That becomes the issue. So this idea of what is the relationship between those 13 states and this new federal government? They're still trying to are trying to reconcile that. We're still trying to reconcile some of that today. First three articles establishes the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary. That's my checks and balances. That's my separation of powers. They knew that. Okay? The president, the executive, has the responsibility of executing laws. The legislature will make the laws. The Supreme Court, the judiciary, decides if those laws are constitutional. Okay, but what does that mean? I'm trying to see if a law is constitutional. What does that mean? That means that I'm trying to determine if that law aligns with who we say we are at that moment. Things change over time. The judiciary can reverse itself. Things change over time. And that's okay, because this document was written to exist from now on. And they wanted something that would serve every generation going forward. They didn't want to have to go through this again. Establishes procedures to ratify the Constitution, identifies principles of federalism. Now, when you see federalism, what does that mean? Because that takes us back to this. So the monarchy's on one end, the Articles of Confederation are on the opposite end. Now we're going to settle on something in the middle. So we have to be able to decide who's got the power between the state government and the federal government. That's supposed to be 48-52, 50-50, 45-55. What does that look like? They're still trying to determine that. Okay? Never done this before. Now, in terms of representation, we see this. You'll always see this in your history books, text, articles. These are the types, these are the legislative plans that they had to deal with to decide representation. The larger states wanted what became known as the Virginia Plan, introduced by the delegates from Virginia. They said representation should be based on population. The number of folks to represent me should be based on population. So what does that look like in the real world if representation is based on population? The more people you have, the more representation you have. Well, guess what the smaller state said? That ain't fair to us just because we don't have enough people. So the representatives of the small states, the New Jersey plan, said, no, we need representation that's equal. Every state gets whatever number equal we decide on. Now here comes a compromise that says, well, okay, let's fix it this way then. Because right now, this is all about compromise. And they understood that. They understood that I'm not gonna get everything I want. But what's most important? What's most important is that we have something, a document, that can serve as the foundation going forward that takes us to the one. We the people of the United States. That's what's most important. Some of my own little issues, not so much. So we ended up with a two-house legislature. The upper house is the Senate. How many members are in the Senate from each state? Two. Okay. House of Representatives, the lower house, is based on population. 435. distributed among the states. Louisiana loses population, they lose representation. Arizona gains population, they get those same number. Is that fair now? That's about as close as fair as we're going to get. Because there is some attempt at being equitable. The executive, what's his term? Term of office in the executive, the president. 4-year term. Senate, 6-year term. House of Representatives, 2-year term. What about the judiciary? Life, 4, 6, 2, and life. How come everybody's not on a 4-year schedule?
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Why am I changing that? What's the goal? They're trying to protect the integrity. They're trying to protect this document. They have, in their mind, the best interest of the country. Look, there are no political parties yet. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say anything about political parties. Okay? So they are going to change, vary the terms. Right now, there's a term limit on the presidency, which is what? No more than 2 consecutive terms. When George Washington stepped into the White House, or stepped into the executive, wasn't the White House yet, there were no term limits. He had a 4-year term. They couldn't think of everything. Some of this, they're just working it out as they go along. Washington didn't really want to be that responsibility, didn't want to be this president. But they said, George, you're the only one that can make this work. Because they are already arguing. He said, it's okay, I'll do it. But don't get comfortable with me. When he turned around, 92, they said, we need you to do another 4 years. He said, look, this is it. He walked away from power in 1796. And that never happened before. So every president after him served 2 consecutive terms, those that were reelected, and then they just went home. Except, which Roosevelt? Frank. Okay, elected in 1932, reelected in 36, and then here we come into 1940. And he decides to go for a 3rd term. What's happening in 1940? I got the Great Depression. World War II. World War II started in 39. All right. So Roosevelt is saying, now's not the time to shift leadership. Was he right? Okay, that's fine. Was this unconstitutional? It hadn't come up yet. All right. So there were questions even in with Franklin Roosevelt about how much power does the executive have? They were adamant, the founding fathers were adamant that we make sure that there's this system of checks and balances. We do not want this new government, this new republic, to become a tyranny. Anybody got any questions? Everybody know where I am? Hold on a second.
So every president after Washington, like, they were just following after him with the two-term thing?
They just followed in line.
Okay.
Because he set the precedent. If Washington did it, then I'll do it. The goal, the office of the presidency was not about the individual. It's about service. Mm-hmm. It's about public service to my community. If I've been blessed to get an education, I understand a little history, a little government, a little politics, then I owe it to my community to serve them for a time. I'll do my time, I step away, I let somebody else do their time. It was never meant to be a career. Okay, and we can have that debate as to what happened. When did it change? But initially, this is about service. That's why it's called public service. Three-fifths compromise. Historians will typically say that the biggest debates within this meeting that became known as the Constitutional Convention was over representation and slavery. Now, we sit on a former plantation. That's where we are. So, why didn't we see slavery as more pronounced during this document? And understand that the three-fifths clause was still about representation. This was a means of counting slaves for representation purposes. Why did I have to have this compromise? This is going to be the first compromise about slavery. Nowhere did they ever talk about we need to end this system. The South, the slaveholding South, wanted to count their slaves one for one. What would that do for them politically? Increases their representation. They understood that. The North is saying, well, wait a minute, I can't let you do that. They can't even vote. So how am I going to let you count them for representation? The South said, well, look, we're not going to sign this unless you do. Give me something. Because in a democracy, what did the South already know? They understood compromise. And they also understood that slavery could be voted out at any time. That's that mob rule thing. So they wanted to make sure I protect this institution of slavery. I insulate it somewhat from democracy, which could be counter to what we say we are. Right? The Electoral College. The Electoral College was set up as a means of making sure that mob rule didn't take place. because the people could vote. But look, there's always this concern that people can be bamboozled by a charismatic individual. They understood that. We've got to put something in place that protects the government, the country. That's what this becomes. Now, we can have that debate and that argument. Is the Electoral College still necessary? Our literacy rate is probably the highest it's ever been. Is the Electoral College still necessary? We can have that conversation. But when they set this up, they want to make sure, yes, those people that are eligible, that are citizens, can vote, but we also have some folks over here that are going to vote. Now, their vote is supposed to match the public. Okay? In theory. The Bill of Rights. Now we're moving into George Washington's administration. The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights were designed to define the relationship between the states and the federal government. All right? Define that relationship. Because there's nothing in the Constitution that protects the rights of the citizens, the people. President has to be 35 years old. His term is 4 years. And this person over here that becomes a U.S. senator has to be this. And when this was initially set up, the Senate wasn't even chosen by the people. The Senate was chosen by the House of Representatives. What's that got to do with the people? So what's the First Amendment? And I'm not going to go through all of them. Freedom of religion, speech, press, assembly, and the right to petition the government. The peaceable right to petition the government. Why do you think that's number one? He's coming.
So having your own opinion of something, either it was right or wrong, it's just having you having to say what you have to say is just important, because whether right or wrong, no one can jail you for saying what you have to say.
So why would that be number one?
Because
yes,
we as people, we talk every single day.
We talk.
We speak. And why should I have to confirm or kind of hide what I need to say in case someone's looking around saying, oh, well, you can't say this or that. And this.
So what happened before the revolution, though? Could you say that openly?
No.
No. Remember, this is the generation that lived through the revolution. So they are kind of in order, those things that they thought are important. What's the problem with religion? How many of the colonists left England because of the right to worship how they want to worship? So I'm going to put that in the first thing. I want to be able to worship however I want to worship. I want the ability to, if I have a complaint against the government, I want to bring that complaint up. I want to deal with that. And that becomes, so you can't put me in jail just because I don't like your policy. I have a right to say that. Now, my right to say that cannot interfere with somebody else's right, though, to do whatever it is that they're doing.
It can only interfere if it's done with action.
If it's done with action. Mm-hmm. Okay. Second Amendment, right to bear arms. Now, at this point in time, what type of weapons were they dealing with? Muskets, one load, pop it in. Fire, I got to reload, repack. A bayonet. It's nothing like the weapons that we have today. Okay. So the question comes in, if they, the founding fathers, had any inkling of the technology that would develop, would they have included that? Now, I don't know. But what was the impetus behind the Second Amendment? To protect myself.
From your family.
From
outside. Military.
From outside, from
anything
coming in at you.
Okay.
That's not supposed to.
And remember, this is defining that relationship between the people and the government. And what happened at Lexington and Concord? They tried to come in, and the British government, the British soldiers, they were coming after what they thought were weapons that were stockpiled and individuals that had those weapons. And when we say coming after them, what are they going to do with them when they caught them? They're going to put them in jail. I'm going to take your stuff. Now, was England justified in doing it? I hear you have weapons. Am I justified in coming to get your weapons? Why not? What? Okay. So, what is the job of the government? Protect life. Okay, which is found in the Declaration of Independence, right? So, that's the government's job. Is to protect you. But if you got weapons and you might not be, sane, you're a threat to everybody else on the block. Why can't I come get those guns?
Because it's covered under your Second Amendment right.
Now?
But before then it wasn't.
Before then,
it
but,
was sane.
But even now, am I not doing my job?
No.
Why not? If she's not sane,
then that's her problem.
She's not saying, if she stockpiling weapons, everybody else is in danger. What would you say to me, the government, if I knew she had those weapons and I did nothing? And then if she blew up the whole neighborhood, then I'm going to say, well, I knew she had the weapons. Then what are y'all going to say? Why didn't you do something?
How are you supposed to do that if it's covered under your Second Amendment right?
What precautions are you taking? Now we know what they're taking. They doing background checks, stuff like that. But
are they?
Supposedly.
Yeah, because it's still a lot going on.
Okay. But just because I passed a background check in July, I didn't get the Christmas present. Oh, look, I didn't get the Valentine's present I wanted in February. Now I'm angry. Now I'm coming for you, or you got somebody else the Valentine's present I wanted. Now I'm mad. Why?
What about the people who it's not even for them and they just going in there and taking? You're taking things that aren't for you. So I feel like if you have impure intentions behind this amendment, people going to do what they want to do. You just have to make sure it's at least in writing. So you're protected on your part.
Because I am, by and large, a republic is predicated upon everybody doing the right thing all the time. Washington, I'm gonna walk away after 8 years. That's the right thing to do. And everybody has to do the right thing, or else we don't, this can't work. So. Have we lost something between 1790 and now? Are people trying to do the right thing all the time?
So we embrace the idea of the one. We're one people. And it's all of us, we're all in this together. And now we can have that discussion that maybe it's this row, they got their own ideas about what's going on. I got this row that got its own ideas, and they don't talk to each other. In fact, if I see you on the street, there's going to be some chairs moving. Okay? All right. The rest of the Bill of Rights, the first 10. So the first 10 amendments are known as the Bill of Rights, defines the relationship between the people, the government, and its people. Defines the limits on what a government can and cannot do. It cannot speedy and public trial, no excessive bails or fines, no unreasonable searches. All searches require warrants. Now, that's really to protect you, right? The police just can't come in and say, we searching everything. Well, where's your proof? Where's your suspicion? What if I don't have it? Then you can't come in. And it has to be specific to the places to be searched. And so that's to protect people. Okay.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations of Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Double jeopardy. Now, we've played fast and loose with that. If I commit a crime, and let's say I get away with it, you can't get new evidence later and come back and try me again. At least not in the same court. They've gotten creative. I can try you in another court. All right? But you can't. You got one shot at me. Now, in this country, we operate under what? You're presumed innocent until proven. So it is the state's job to prove that you're guilty. You don't have to prove your innocence. I'm innocent. I can go in and sit down all day long. I don't have to defend myself. I don't have to. You've got to prove, you've got to get the evidence that says I did it. Now, if your evidence looks good, then I might have something to say. But if it's just, you know, kind of out there, like, nah, they got to come get me. Okay? And there are some high-profile cases where we see folks where the government did not prove their case. Okay? All right. The Federalist Papers. Remember I said the purpose of meeting in Philadelphia was to amend the Articles of Confederation. So here they come. They're taking this document back to their states, and they want the states to ratify it. And the states are now saying, what is this? Your directions were not to create another form of government. We had the Articles of Confederation that we were comfortable with. Yes, it needed some tweaking. But you've got something else now. So here come the Federalist Papers. The purpose of the Federalist Papers was to defend what they did and convince the states to ratify it. Ratify the Constitution. All right? Obviously did a good job. States ratified it. We throw in the Bill of Rights and states were okay. But the Federalist Papers, Hamilton, Adams, and who else? John Jay. All right. So they're trying to convince everybody that it was necessary to start over and come up with this new document. Now, George Washington was a Southerner from Virginia, but he leaned more towards this strong central government. So the interpretation of the Constitution is where we see the beginnings of this political process, political parties. We got the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, or they're known as Democratic Republicans or Republicans. The Federalists wanted this strong central government. The Democratic Republicans wanted stronger state governments. They were fearful that the federal government would get too powerful. But watch some of the characteristics here. Look at that third bullet. Appeal to businesses, manufacturing, and they opposed the French Revolution. So, geographically, where might these folks come from? The North. Business, manufacturing. These guys are in the North. They're trying to model this closely towards this English system. Because who's still buying their product? England. So that's where you see them. So women, black, and no view to secondary attempts to impose, not created to be a democracy. That's the Federalist Party. So when we talk about the Democratic Republicans, Jefferson and Madison. Now, here's the thing I want you to keep in mind. Madison is considered the father of the Constitution. Took the notes, put all this together, boom. Now he comes back and says, well, did we go too far? Did we give the federal government too much power? All right. So Thomas Jefferson is influencing him. Right. Madison is like Robin to Jefferson's Batman. Okay. He might be good on his own when he changes costume, but right now they're working kind of together. And they are Southerners. Now, while the Federalists never said anything about ending slavery. You know, the Democratic Republicans are not at all, because what is their biggest product? Agriculture, cotton. All right? So, all those things that are heavily dependent upon slave labor. This is where, and they're going at each other, especially, you know, Hamilton. And Jefferson over the interpretation of what the Constitution says or does not say. The Constitution was purposefully vague in some areas because they wanted it to be able to go forward. They didn't want to be so narrow that as something changes, they got to come back and redo this. So they created a system where we can add on to it with the amendments. But the basic backbone of the Constitution is not changed. I mentioned slavery. The only other thing within the Constitution, they did talk about ending the slave trade in 20 years. Not slavery, but the overseas slave trade, the Middle Passage. But even with that, folks were still smuggling slaves in through Galveston, New Orleans, Mobile, and still making a profit from that. So we know, the data shows us that the numbers of slaves increased after 1807, 1808. Now we're dealing with slavery between states. All right? But nobody's ever discussing, should we, at least not on any kind of public stage. Now they're having their little private conversations, but they're not having a public discourse about slavery, even though they talked about this being a country of freedom, independence. But yet you own slaves. How did they reconcile that? At this point, they didn't. All right, I didn't get all the way through. Anybody got any questions? If you do, he's got the mic. Anybody? Thank y'all so much. I really appreciate it. Got that Michigan shirt on. That's all right. We're meeting in New Science on Wednesday. Your midterm is a week from Wednesday. Bring your own Scantron, bring your own pencils. Let's hope we can. I want to review next Monday. I'll take half the class period, maybe, and we can review on Monday. If you have something to review, if not, yes, ma'am.
Thanks for listening to this week's Lectures in History podcast. To find even more history content, visit c-span.org/AHTV.